Hello!
We've been doing this for some time and we're bored now.
There's no other way of saying hello.
Yeah, but that does look nice on screen. Isn't that all sort of
tells
off?
Rather, yeah.
Welcome to Movie Banter.
Hey, I'm Paul Carenza.
I'm John Sands.
And I'm Jennifer Masters. Hello.
Oh, Jen Flicky.
Is all right. Look at you. We don't back and forth between the microphone.
Except we don't do any stereo things with that, so that will probably just sound normal.
Oh.
Sorry.
Well, it's because they're both facing away from me.
That's true.
So, oh, yeah, do you know which one to pick?
I don't know.
We can move it a bit if you want.
No, no, it's okay. I'll just favour.
One or the other. Just shout out in the middle.
Okay.
Well, yes, welcome to the episode. We're here. We've battled through the ice and the snow.
That is true, we were snowed in. Well, you were snowed in on your road.
I was.
At the top of a big hill.
Yeah
it was. It was bad. It was bad. And so that if there's any delay in this podcast reaching you, it's because of the ice.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's the snow and the ice.
It's
because the internet superhighway needs gritting. And, but we've emailed some salt to the server. And
you've emailed a picture of Veruca Salt and Angelina Jolie.
Yeah,
down the line.
I've de-iced my monitor, and so it should work. The podcast should be defrosted for
back
you
on
and
force.
Ready
Find
to
a
rock.
Way.
Yes, all is well.
That's true. Yeah, and so Angelina Jolie has fought off, or Veruca Salt has fought off Miranda Frost.
Nice.
From Die Another Day.
Okay. Yeah, that works.
And Michael Keaton. Jack Frost.
Okay.
Sorry.
Just randomly.
I know, I'm just, Michael Keaton.
My brain is just getting away with me. Yeah. Anyway.
You could add that to any joke. Just add Michael Keaton. Just to try and confuse people.
And then look at them in a really confused way when they don't get it.
Yeah, it's
very obvious.
Come on.
Anyway. Well, this is 82?
Oh, something like that.
I think it's 82.
We're getting
82.
Old.
If not, apologies. Oh. Yeah. So we're now as old in numbers as Jen is in years.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And heavy in stone.
I say in years, and Jen just agrees and goes blindly with it, even though it's ridiculous. And yet 82 stone, yeah. Jen gets offended at it, as if anyone thinks, Jen's not even half that, it's fine. Exactly.
Barely.
Barely half.
Yes.
Give it, mind you, after Christmas, yeah, she might have tipped,
that's very true.
Tipped the scale.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Bring it on! Bring it on! They've been two news stories. This is a tangent, but hey, it's what we do. Two news stories in the last 2 days on the radio about there's been apparently a UK shortage of sprouts.
Really?
Yeah, so you may not get sprouts on your
Christmas.
What a shame.
And also UK shortage of mistletoe, so you may not get mistletoe on your plates either. But,
now that's a bit of a shame, because I'd imagine if you had loads of sprouts, no mistletoe, probably not a problem, because no one's going to be coming anywhere near
you. You can hang sprouts from the ceiling and
Well, I was thinking more with the terrible wind, that will scare off.
Kiss under the sprouts.
we all have a kiss under our sprouts?
No.
Sorry. I caught myself.
Do not catch yourself by the sprouts.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, that can be quite sharp.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, welcome to the show.
Yes.
Some admin before we begin. Leslie Nielsen.
That genuinely saddened me.
All right.
When that hit. Yes. And it wasn't even of pneumonia, it was of complications from pneumonia. So it's all just a little bit.
There must have been a pratfall at the end there somewhere.
Well, you'd hope
it
must have been. And as I stuck on Facebook, which I don't know, it just occurred to me as a quote, and it's only afterwards I remembered it was about death. But him in Naked Gun saying, "Oh, that's no way for a man to die. Having your nuts bit off by a Laplander, that's the way I want to go. Yeah, your parachute not opening, that's the way." And I was thinking, that's how it should have been. But alas, no.
Well,
but yes, he'll be sorely missed.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm sure I watched Naked Gun last week, and I'm sure many others did. And,
and also Police Squad, which I haven't seen in years, and is really, really good. Arguably better than the Naked Gun films.
Well, it's best really to, Police Squad, Airplane, Naked Gun, it's best to sort of revisit those. Because not that you want to bring up the rubbish at this stage of a person's when they've just passed, but he kept on having cameos in other spoofs, like the really kind of the more rubbish spoofs of recent years, which was a slight, and it wasn't he in one of the Scary Movies, I think
he's in Scary Movie 3 and 4, which were both better than 2, but still not,
and he was
great.
The best thing in them when he was in it. But then the thing is, he's a spoofer. And they stopped making the decent spoofs. They made rubbish spoofs. So he had to be in
them.
He
was doing really good.
If he wanted to be in spoofs.
Doing the best.
Spoofs? Spoofs.
Spoofs.
Spoofs. Hooves.
Roofs.
Dwarves.
Spoofs. Yes.
Anyway.
Go on, let's round.
Okay.
I want to say spoofs.
I
want
to say spoofs.
Well, that does sound like a racial slur. I don't know. I don't know in relation to who, but it sounds like it should be.
Some spoofsmen in there.
Exactly. No, you can't trust them spoofs, can you?
Exactly,
it just sounds.
I think it's spoofs.
Yeah, but spoofs is funnier.
Spoofs is funnier.
Yeah,
spoofs. Anyway. the other thing I was going to say was Steve Guttenberg. Just because I was chatting to, because it's Christmas, hooray!
Yay!
I've been putting together this Comedians and Carols show we take up and down the country in Christmas time. And a friend of a friend is a guy called Colin Patterson, who's a BBC Entertainment reporter, reports lots of things. And he very kindly offered to, if I could do a little filmy bit with him. So we did that.
Cool.
It's a rubbishy little thing. It's him interviewing the star from right. Nativity. It's kind of,
you're doing a good selling job.
But it's a bit of fun, and we take it around the shows. But no, the first bit of the script I'd written for him was him saying, Dame Judi Dench, Sir Michael Caine, Steve Guttenberg from the Police Academy films, I'm Colin Patterson, I've interviewed all of them, sort of thing.
Right.
And he said to me, how did you know? And
so you had actually interviewed all of them?
Oh, yes, exactly. Right. And I sort of said, well, I guessed you'd probably interviewed Judi Dench and Michael Caine because you've done most of them. Steve Guttenberg, that was just a joke. You know, just meant to be like, that's the ultimate, though, you know, surely. Rule of three in comedy. Yeah. And he said, oh, no, I thought you must have Googled it or something or YouTubed it, because Steve Guttenberg was quite a funny interview. So it's one of my favourite ones I've done.
All right.
Because he said it was, because he's not one of these people you sit down and do like a Parkinson's style interview with. He's one of these roving reporter out of premiere, hey, can we get a quick word type of thing. Yeah. And apparently it was at the Oscars.
Why was Steve Guttenberg at the Oscars?
Well, that's exactly it. Because Colin Patterson was there doing all the interviews with people going in and out and all that. And they was just trying to, you know what it's like on Oscar night? You just grab you go, oh, look, it's Gina Davis. It's Gina Gershon. It's anyone you can grab a word with. Yeah. And so he said, I'm here with Steve Guttenberg. So Steve, you know, it's very exciting Oscar sort of buzz. And are you off to one of the parties? And he said, yeah, I'm off to the official Oscar party thing. He said, oh, wow. Well, how did you get an invite without being in the main audience? He said, well, I was in the main audience. He goes, well, you were in the Oscar audience? He goes, yes. And he said, well, but how? How did you get a ticket? And he said, well, I'm Steve Guttenberg. But yeah, but how did you get a ticket, I think?
I always assume with the Oscars that, you know, they're sort of a pecking order. And,
you'd have thought.
Yeah, you're Steve Guttenberg's off the
You'd have thought, no.
No offence to the man.
I know.
But he's not really...
Well, that's exactly what...
He's probably the life and soul of a party.
Well, he probably is.
That's exactly what Colin thought, I think. And he said, how did you get in, though? How did you get there? And he said...
Sneaking through the kitchen.
Steve Guttenberg said, well, I'm a member of the Academy. And Colin Patterson, of course, says... The Police Academy? And apparently the look on his face was not welcome.
Oh, dear.
I thought very, very quick. Well done. Nice. I like your work, Colin.
I didn't know he was a member of the Academy. Well, why is he a member of the Academy?
He's a member of both academies. The two that matter. So there you go. Anyway, that's the anecdote. We should probably talk about some films, shouldn't we, really?
Well, yes. We have a selection. We have, once Paul pulls up the list.
There we go. We've got five films this week. Five.
Oh, five.
Five gold films.
Yes.
Well, it is Christmas.
Got Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Yes. Yes.
Due Date.
Yes.
Monsters.
Yes.
Unstoppable.
Unstoppable, yes.
And Rare Exports. An unusual Finnish film. That
does
somehow
have a, does made have a weird into... beginning as well.
Somehow made it into a multiplex, like a sort of.
Jen
just got
Jen,
it. I think
Jen very confused, and then she's like, "Ah."
At the end, you just want to go fa-ish.
Anyway, yes.
Good. So, should we begin with some Harry Potter?
Probably Harry Potter, I think.
Yeah.
Potter.
Have you seen this?
That was yes, audio charades. Dirty Harry, well done.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. Not seen it. I know. I want to see it.
I haven't had the chance to see it.
I've seen all the others.
Right.
The last couple have confused me a little, if I'm honest.
Really?
Because I haven't read any of the books.
Right.
And you see the film and you think, I've seen all the films, that's fair enough. But it's always been so long. I've only seen them ever once.
Yeah.
And I need a refresh because I just know that there's these three kids and there's Voldemort and we don't like him. That's about as much as I've got.
I think that is it.
That is basically it.
That is it. Yeah. I think you're looking for more.
Well, I read some reviews that said don't go and see this unless you're up to speed on the other films.
I think you need to be up to speed. Having seen the other films, you'll be all right. They do enough of a catch up. The main plot point of this one is they're trying to track down the Horcruxes, which are like little fragments of Voldemort's soul.
Oh, yes.
That
was mentioned in the last one.
Yes.
Yes, that's right.
And so they do enough just to get you up to speed.
Mm.
But I think mainly it's that if you've seen the other film, you'll know who all the characters are.
Yes, and their relations.
Yes, rather than little specifics of plot. It's more Yeah, there's no instinct of, you know, oh, you're his mother and you're their friend and you've been at school. It's just none of that.
Right.
It's just all hit the ground running and you're off. But plot-wise, it is pretty much, you know, we're on the run from Voldemort. He's taken over. We need to try and save the world. That's it.
I heard someone say it's lots of camping and stuff like that.
Yeah, yes. There's causing, no Hogwarts.
Yeah, there is no Hogwarts because they've been kicked
causing
out
the subtitle Harry on Camping.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, there's no Hogwarts and it's all a bit more grey and bleak.
Yes.
A bit more grown up ish.
Yeah, definitely. There's
I wouldn't go too far with that, to be honest. But,
no, it's not adult.
No.
Harry Potter late. Right. But yeah, it definitely is more. It's more adult in terms of they're all now late teens.
They're all really depressed. Mm.
Well, yes, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
The world is
moody.
The world is against them. They're on the run.
Writing poetry.
Yeah.
It's all angsty. Yeah. But and also, in partly, that's credited to they find a fragment, one of the Horcruxes, which is on a locket which Harry wears around his neck.
Yeah.
And they realise, fortunately, quite early, rather than him being moody and no one knows why, they realise quite quickly that it affects your mood if you're wearing this thing. And so they end up sort of passing it around each other. But it does mean that they all get a bit snippy at each other because they're all being affected by this thing.
Basically, he turns into Frodo.
Right.
Yeah. But they don't. It's not over-laboured, so you don't get tired of it, because at least...
Except for one point where... I've got the name. Don't know.
I don't know who you're talking about, so I can't help you.
Gingerhead guy. What's his name?
Weasley.
Ron. There you go. I was going to call him Don, anyway.
Don Weasley.
Don Weasley. Don Weasley, I come to you on the day of your daughter.
He throws a bit of a hissy fit and runs off for a while, and it's clearly because of this damn pendant, but, you know, no one ever mentions that at that point. It's just like, okay,
bye. I think Hermione says, yeah, you wouldn't be feeling like this if it wasn't this, and he takes it off and basically says, yeah, I would, and storms off. Ooh. So there's a little bit of teenage angst.
He's gingers.
I know, firing.
Can't live with him, can't kill him.
Legally.
Paul, yeah. I think we should point out that Paul is ginger.
Yes.
Just in case. So that makes it fine. Paul is king of the gingers.
That's right.
And speaks for all of you.
I mean, yeah, it's a good film. You do become aware just how much there is left. So a film in itself is not, it's not rounded or anything. It's very much...
It does
one
very much stop in
parts.
The middle, yeah. And not even like Lord of the... Well, yeah, Lord of the Rings, the first ones have just cut off slightly, but this one even more so.
Yeah.
Well, someone, my mate, interject with a comment from Blair Tyler, who said, I know most people are of the opinion that the movie was only split in two for financial reasons, but I like to think of it as a film is split in two so as to tell a fantastic story in the detail it was intended to be told in. Mm. And frankly, to include all the Horcrux destructions and final showdown with Voldemort in one movie would be a rushed mess of a film.
No, I do agree. Having read all the books, I'm not... Not slavish to anyone, because I think I've read all the books once and seen the films once. But the films have always been a little bit truncated on the books, and nothing too drastic, because I think fans will say, no, but how could he lose all these bits? But none of it was vital that got cut out.
Mm.
And I think for this, there's more vital stuff plot-wise. I think this film could have been a little bit shorter. Slightly tighter.
I think it could have been a lot shorter if they just took out all the pointless pauses in the dialogue. They're just,
yeah,
it's, I hate to say it, but it's because these are child
bit.
Actors who are comfortable and don't ever really get tested. And the fact is, there are better actors out there. And every scene is just killed in pace, either by editing or by delivery or by both. I don't know, but you're just like, get on with it! There you go.
Yeah. So it could be a little bit short. Not a huge, but not in plot-wise.
Only about half an hour shorter, if you
said. Yeah, that's good.
But I think it's good that they've left everything in. That, and I think they've added some bits and changed some bits, but fundamentally it's all there.
Rather sweet moment of Harry and Hermione dancing.
Yes, which
in...
I think someone may
have
that
person, was,
isn't actually,
again, Blair mentioned about that as well.
I think
it's his favourite scene, but it's not even in the book.
Aww.
But it's really sweet and shows a real difference between book Harry and movie Harry. Movie Harry has a level of goofiness to him and can get away with a silly dance, whereas book Harry is just extremely angry and depressed all throughout the journey.
Yes. I think also to a degree it may be, because I think it's quite a nice scene because in, this is maybe a slight spoiler thing, but the book's been out for ages, most people seeing the films have probably read the books or know of the books, and so we kind of know by now that Harry and Hermione are not destined to get together. We know that's not going to happen.
Oh, don't ruin it for me!
And so whereas you could have had that scene... Cause, yeah, because you haven't seen it before.
Well, it's slightly ambiguous to begin with.
Well, a little bit, but essentially it's after Ron has gone and they're camped out in the middle of the woods. And they're just depressed and just everything's wow. Bow chicken wow. Oh yeah, there are a couple of there are a couple of instances where Jen and I both turned to each other and bow chicken wow in very
inappropriate. Wasn't there one in the last room? There was a tying shoelaces. Moment, oh yes, wasn't there? I believe there was.
It's a swing scene because they're both depressed and a fun song comes on the radio and Harry, I think there's no dialogue really, but Harry essentially gestures to Hermione and say, come on, let's have a dance and try and forget our troubles. And I think if we didn't know that they weren't going to get together, you'd be watching like, hey, this is the moment where they get together. But because you almost know that's not going to happen,
you can enjoy it.
Yeah, you sort of enjoy it for what it's just them trying to cheer themselves up. And at the end of it, the mood breaks very quickly and they sort of end up depressed again. But it makes the scene work better.
Okay.
So it is. I did enjoy it. It could be a little bit shorter. Mm. And it does, kind of like the last film, is a build-up to these two films. Mm. I think this film is a build-up to the next film.
Yeah. And the next film is a build-up to the silence that will come after that.
Well, yes. There is still a lot goes on. They basically have sort of a shootout in a cafe with wands, which is quite cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there's a good chase scene at the beginning. Sorry, it is quite...
Yeah, it's a very enjoyable film, and I sound a bit negative on it, but it's, you know, it works, and I do like... They're visually great films, and just anything to do with magic. The fact that they really, you know, it is a magical film.
Yeah.
Well, and they've developed a lot since the first couple, which were a bit Chris Columbus-y.
Yes.
And a little bit...
They have progressed.
Kids films, whereas they're now a bit more grown up, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yes,
which definitely. I mean, which makes sense, because you can't really have... Because now they're all adults, there are no children in it, so you can't really have a children's film with no children. You're going to have to grow up with it.
Yeah.
And it's good, and I'm looking forward to the next one, which I think is next summer.
The Harry Potter and the Deathly Goodbyes.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm.
And I'm also... No, sorry, I just realised what you did to that. No.
But are there actually... I think I've heard interviews with the author saying that... she hasn't actually said that there won't be any more films. I think she's going, oh, well, maybe I've changed my mind.
Well, yeah, I think initially she said
I've spent all my money.
I'm bankrupt. I'm going to churn out.
Putting it all on the horses.
Yeah. But I say that even if not Harry, because there's an epilogue at the last book, so you kind of know how it turns out, but there is still a lot of middle ground. But also, given they're essentially children's books or young adult books, I think you can't really have all adults in a children's book. You're going to need to ground it with more children. So you need a new cast of children.
The next generation?
Well, pretty much.
So maybe the kids, when Harry and Ron
have
adopted because of, you know...
how things pan out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I haven't read the books. I genuinely don't know what happens at the end, genuinely.
But I think if nothing, you've got this,
I don't know
this amazing world, which you could do a lot with. Mm. But she might want to do something else, but she might well want to revisit it because it would do well. Yeah. But she'd need... I think it would need to be more than just a random cash-in of, you know, Harry Potter and the shameless cash-in.
Yeah.
I think you need Harry Potter and the tax bill that's come due.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You'd need a bit more to go with it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's an enjoyable film, but, yeah, you should have seen the others just to get a feel for it all. I think, weirdly, the biggest question I had, at the very beginning, we see Voldemort and all the evil guys in someone's house with a woman sort of suspended over the table, clearly in pain. And I think, Jen, you asked me, and I was wondering, who's that woman? Do we know her from who she is? Trying to work it out. And no, we don't. I looked on the IMDb. I don't think she's been in any of the other films. But it's that degree of uncertainty where you think, I feel I should know who that is. Oh, no, I'm not actually meant to know. It's fine.
It might be that once they're all out on DVD and all that, you could sit down and watch the lot and go, okay, it makes it satisfying.
I think it would.
Yeah.
I mean, they do all tie together.
Yeah.
It's just, kind of, in a weird way, kind of like series of 24. Mm. Every so often someone will turn up and you go, oh, that's all them from series 2.
I would quite like, actually, films don't really do this, but like the recap you get for a minute before.
Yeah, previously on Harry Potter.
I'd like that. I feel like I need a bit of an update because before I go and see every Harry Potter film, I'm on Wikipedia looking at the previous six different plot lines of all, trying to keep it all.
I think studios should do it. I mean, the trailers, release the trailer for the new film and also just have a previously on Harry Potter thing, because you've got six films to sum up.
Yeah.
Even just before the film have a...
Yeah, and they do. I mean, they refer to events in the Chamber of Secrets, which is the second film.
I couldn't tell you what happened in there.
No.
Essentially, there's a big snake in it. They stab a diary.
They stab a diary?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
They should stab the snake, not the diary. What
they? They stab the diary with the snakes too.
Seen the film, this is new
Harry
to me.
But anyway, but they refer to that. But again, they refer to it and sort of explain it at the same time, so that's fine.
Can I just mention there's one really good thing in this film, which we haven't mentioned yet, and that is the animation.
Oh yes,
it is brilliant.
Yeah, there's a
little cartoon halfway through, isn't it?
Yes, there actually is.
Really?
The Deathly Hallows, which I'd completely forgotten about reading the book. Because Deathly Hallows is a slightly weird thing, and that's the Deathly Hallows, we find out, are three magical items.
Which should come up in Fairy Tale, but
yeah, and they probably actually real. Go and see someone who says, the Deathly Hallows, here's the story of Deathly Hallows, and it's like three brothers were facing death, and then stuff happened, which you'll see. But this entire story, while he's narrating it, is told through a very interestingly animated story.
Okay. So it is a cartoon, halfway.
Yeah, there actually is. And it's sort of, it looks like stop motion, but kind of silhouetted shadows. Mm. Yeah, and it's just very interesting to look at. And the guy who directed that, isn't directed by someone who did the rest of the film, who was David someone. But the guy who directed it has now got other directing things and is like working on the film as well. Okay. And I'd be interested to see it because it's visually very interesting.
Yeah, it was great.
And it does, yeah, it just sort of breaks up the film a bit and reinvigorates you.
I put it as the highlight of the film.
Which isn't really to do down the rest of the film.
No, it's just
but it's
so good.
Yeah.
Sometimes halfway through a film, you need a cartoon. Mm. Sometimes you do it.
Yeah.
You
know. This isn't like Tom and Jerry.
Kill Bill knew that. You
know. Well, yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. It is kind of like Kill Bill.
It's split in half as well. You know, there's a lot in common.
True.
Yeah.
At the end, Voldemort, or Harry kills Voldemort with like the five palm
technique. Yeah,
it's fine. Yeah, and then takes his child. No, it isn't. But anyway, so Harry Potter, go and see it. Because it is
cool. Well, I shall.
You should.
Cool, right.
Have we heard out what Martin Moore?
Martin Moore said, I saw Harry Potter and it was nice.
Excellent.
Yeah, thank you, Martin.
It's good. Succinct, but to the point.
I know Martin. He's a very funny comedian from Northern Ireland. He's on stage, he's a scary, big, scary man.
Right.
And in reality, he's a lovely pussycat. If you're listening, Martin, hello.
Hello.
And hello. Well, thank you for your comment. Yes. Speaking of scary big things, monsters.
Ooh, hey.
Hey. But they're cuddly, really, when you get to know them.
Really?
Well, I don't know. I don't know any monsters. But
you know, Jen.
Coming over the hill.
Bless you. Bless you. That was so quiet that probably no one could even hear that. But it was, for those who could, it was value for money. Yes, well, that's kind of the point of the film Monsters. We don't get to know the monsters. We don't get to sit down and have a cup of tea with them and go, what's your trouble, monsters?
Right.
They're always in the distance. They're far away, their background, you see. Okay. Because this is a very interesting, I'd say much hyped, but only in an indie way. Technically, it's a British independent film.
Okay.
But you wouldn't know that to look at it, because in the film, it actually says in Mexico, trying to get into the United States, with two lead roles who are played by Americans, and big budget, what looks like big budget effects.
Yeah.
But actually, it's made for, rumours are £500,000. Pounds.
Wow.
And edited on this guy's laptop, and it's an independent movie. And
cool.
I think it's a landmark film, really, because it's saying, hey, we can all do this now. You don't need a big studio and money to do this.
Well,
we
you still need £500,000.
You need a bit of money, you know.
No, down the back of the sofa. But yeah, but compared to what it would have cost, District 9 was like that, but that felt like that was seemed at the time on a very low budget. It was like $20 million or something.
I don't know what it was, but yeah.
Probably less than that.
Yeah, yeah.
But clearly the costs are coming down all the time. They're getting decent effects.
Yeah, yeah.
Filming on digital, I'd imagine, makes it
ridiculously
cheap.
I think the camera they used was about £1,000, which just compared to what they used to be, they used to be, £100,000.
Really? £1,000 a day, maybe? Was it a digital film?
I think it was just a normal still camera, which had video. This good camera.
Amazing.
Well, this is what they filmed this on.
On Monsters, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The season finale of House last year, there's like a Canon. It's a Canon digital SLR. It was like 500C or something. And the season finale of House, they filmed on that. Just filmed a video on that, and you wouldn't have known any different.
No, exactly, yeah. You can do it nowadays. Mm. It's an amazing thing. And as a result of using such a small thing and without a massive crew and all that, it was filmed on location in Mexico with these two actors and the director, who I think was also the cameraman and a sound guy. And I think that was it, pretty much. Just like four or five of them, in a car, driving around. And they had a very, very loose script. They just said, in this scene, this will happen. We need to get from A to B, like this. You'd make it up yourselves, really. And so, therefore, the actors in it, apart from those two, are just people they met on the way.
Right.
And particularly, when you see the film...
Who presumably knew they were in a film. And sort of
well, yeah, they did. Well, yeah.
As you hear, can you say
it wasn't like Borat style, you're in a film, sign this, quick. No, they were saying, we're making a film, do you want to be in it? We're doing this. Particularly, when you do see it, there is a guy who plays the Mexican... I suppose he's a guy at a desk trying to get them onto into a harbour. He's a harbour master thing. And he's a very, very good, compelling actor and good compelling character. He's on screen for about 5 minutes probably. Quite a few lines. You know, other people just come and go and they just sort of, hey, come onto my boat and that's it. They've got lines, but you can see, okay, fair enough. They were just there and used.
Yeah.
But that guy, he should win awards. He's very, very good. He's on for quite a chunk of the thing. He looks like a professional actor.
Yeah.
From what I gather, he hasn't seen the film.
Right.
They're trying to get in touch with him, but they can't. They don't know where he is because they just saw him.
A passing Mexican.
They said, can you do that? Yeah, I'll do it. And then that's it. So from what I heard, they're trying to get in touch with him via someone who reckons they may have know his family or something.
Right.
But otherwise, he's no idea what this film is. And so do look out for him in the film. He's very good in it. And apart from that, it's just these two guys. And they go around locations, arrive at a place and go, oh, right, this location would be good for this scene. Let's do this. Because they've got such a small camera and such a small crew, you can do that. You can do guerrilla-style filmmaking and just do it on the run. And
be really interested to see it now.
Good film.
The premise is something like, it's kind of District 9-esque, isn't it? Aliens landed and they've been sort of shut off in Mexico somewhere.
Yeah, pretty much. Not quite so strict as District 9 in terms of we've created this ghetto for them.
Yeah.
Because in District 9, they're kind of good aliens, aren't they? Yeah. They're kind of like, oh yeah, well, they live in places like this and they get on. This one is, no, these are big, scary, Independence Day style, War of the Worlds style
aliens. A load of Cloverfield.
We're going to build a massive wall at the US border and then another big sort of checkpoint thing in Mexico. So there's like an infected zone.
Right.
So you don't want to go in there, okay. But there are people in there. And then it becomes a road trip between these two characters. And it's really not about the monsters. That's the weird thing. It's about the two people.
Mm-hmm. Is it horror-y in terms of, you know, monsters jumping out at you at any point, or just
there's a couple of scenes.
You said you don't get to see them, so
you do. They're just kind of background. That's the thing. They are there, right. But if you go expecting a monster movie, you may come out disappointed.
Right.
As I feel like, I think I kind of was a bit, and I know. Having said that, it's a big landmark movie. Well, there is that exactly.
Impression.
Yeah. Having said it's a big landmark movie, I think actually it's more of a landmark movie than it is a brilliant movie.
Yeah,
a lot of the reviews.
It's a worthy film, is it?
Well, I don't know. It's just a lot of the reviews have said that it's really, really, really good, and I think it's pretty good. But I did come away a little bit like, oh, is that it? Sort of thing.
Right.
Only because I think part of me thought, yeah, okay, I know it's not really a monster movie. I know they're in the background, but there'll be a bit more of them. I think I felt Cloverfield District 9. I was thinking,
right, and it's
in that
not,
sort of
it's
realm.
More sort of human,
but it's not. It's just about the people, and
so it's
just,
like,
you've got to ignore the monsters. Really,
it's sort of like Zombieland, but with the zombies. So
a little
more
bit
more about the trip and the journey and the going around.
But it's still well worth
a
look.
Great film,
well, yeah,
so
worth a look. Yeah.
Cool. I shall have to check.
Yeah,
enjoyable.
It sounds very
enjoyable.
Yeah.
So more just know what you're getting, or don't have expectations about what it's.
I think it's more about
expect it will be.
Just going wow at the production values and how they've done it. And at the end of it, I think it's a satisfying, good film. I don't think it's necessarily the masterpiece that a lot of reviewers have said it might be. But it's all right.
Mm.
It's all
good
right.
That they made it.
Cool.
It's all right.
Yes. We had a message from Chris Sands, who's my cousin. Hello, Chris. Saying, monsters, sci-fi road movie, very believably realised alien invasion scenario in Latin America, great leads and visual effects, all done for apparently $500,000. Recommended.
Yeah,
recommended.
Yeah.
Nice.
He has taste. Because he listens to this podcast for a start.
Hello.
Indeed. Hello.
Right.
I think it's time for some movie mashups.
Yay!
Yay! We're going to have the movie mashups. Movie mashups.
Movie mashups. This is an improvised jingle, which neither of you are really committing to.
We've got a band.
Yes. Okay. Yes. If you've not heard this before, then where have you been?
Yeah.
But yeah, the premise is you take two films, you combine two film titles, merge them together with an overlapping word.
So you still have both complete film titles.
Yes. And you can sort of you can share syllables if it comes down to not ideal words, but you can't sort of intermingle them. You have to ends, one begins.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you describe that film and then we have to guess
pitch
what the film
it to
title
us.
Is.
Pitch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such as has been done by Mark Loveday, for example, who says Secret Service agent Frank Horrigan couldn't save Kennedy, but is determined to steal a prototype jet fighter that can be partially controlled by a Neuralink.
I know what this is. It is very.
It sounds like rather boy.
But it is the same actor in both films.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it? Well,
is it?
It is. I think so.
Well, it's not what I think it is then.
All right, what do you think it is?
I thought it's JFK-19 The Widowmaker.
No. That's K-19 The Widowmaker is about a submarine.
Well, I knew it's about a jet fighter or something.
No.
Or something army-ish.
It's in the line of Firefox.
Oh, right. Yes. Oh.
In the Line of Fire is Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood.
And Firefox.
I see.
Yeah, it's all about Clint Eastwood trying to steal a prototype web browser and launch it on an unsuspecting 80s market.
Of course, of course.
Yes. And from Blair Tyler, we have the Knights of the Round Table embark on a perilous and somewhat absurd journey to finance their expedition and must put on a male striptease.
Jen's got it.
Monty Python, the full Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Very good.
And a middle-aged bachelor living off royalties from a song his father wrote befriends a young man and falls in love with the boy's depressed mother. Meanwhile, the boy has made a new friend of his own, to who he's only able to communicate with through a fence and who appears ready for bed.
Is it about a boy in striped pyjamas?
Maybe it is about a boy in striped pyjamas. Appears ready for bed. That does slightly trivialise
the
Holocaust.
Okay.
I'm ready for bed in... Yeah, anyway. Two struggling Irish musicians in the 1930s find love and bloodshed as they rise through the ranks of the New York organised crime world.
I think I know what he's going for.
Is it Gangs of New York?
I think it's... Well, is it Once Upon a Time in America? It could be. Because Once Upon a Time in America is the New York thing. And Once is about... Well, it's about an Irish musician and a... Romanian or Hungarian? No, a Czech musician.
Right.
So they're not both Irish. Ooh. So that's the only thing that... But, so I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe...
Did you have the answers?
I'll have a look.
Because it's always a problem, of course, if people... Yes, you can email in... You can either email in and don't give us the answers, and then this happens, where if we don't get it, we have to guess.
Give it open to you.
No, fair enough.
Oh, no.
But then you can email us. So,
are you sure?
There are no answers.
Fair enough. But because hopefully they're normally sort of gettable, just about. But
you
mean
at the very bottom of
the
email? Sometimes people do that.
Anyway, so Blair, email us if that was the answer. Let's know. Or if you've worked it out and think, if you're screaming at your iPod, it's not that, you fool. Then let's know.
And the last one from Blair. Jen, do you want to read this one?
No.
No? Are you in a sulk?
This put Jen in a strop. Two men kidnap a young woman far more attractive and talented than Jen and refuse to let her go until she sings Bad Moon Rising.
Well, a young woman far more attractive and talented than Jen. That doesn't narrow it
that
down.
That really doesn't narrow it down.
It could be anyone.
Your guys are horrible.
It could be anyone.
It could be almost, and to be fair, a fair degree of blokes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Where is it?
Horrid! Is it
Babe?
Oh. I'm here again. I may use that joke again sometime.
Exactly. Yeah. You may, in a few weeks, you may get a sense of deja vu when the one we recorded earlier comes out.
Anyway.
Don't ruin the magic.
This is not where he's cheating because it's not a film. It's the disappearance of Alice Creed. Clearwater Revival, yes.
I think.
Yes.
But yes, that probably so is that.
But that's not a film, the second one.
I know, there may be a documentary just called that. Maybe. I don't know.
I think it's wrong and horrid.
Pretty wrong.
Yes. In case anyone's wondering, Gemma Arterton stars in The Disappearance of Alice Creed. Who is, let's be honest, far more attractive and talented than Jen. No,
if you're new to the episode,
Gemma Arterton, Gemma Arterton is Jen's nemesis.
See, I have to hate her now.
Why? Just because she's more attractive and talented than you?
Yeah.
Have you got that much hate to hate, mm-hmm. 6 billion people? Anyway.
Shall we...
We love Jen. She is talented and gorgeous.
We've got some more.
The smell.
But should we move them to next time?
Yeah. Should we do one of Jen's? Because Jen sent us a lot.
Do one of Jen's.
So just to make sure we actually get through them. Free-spirited Meryl Streep leaves the Abbey and decides to become a violin teacher to poor inner-city kids.
Nuns on the run?
Doubt? Sister Act.
Sister
Doubt.
No, I've no idea.
Doubt.
Dangerous Minds is what I'm thinking of.
Well, the nun, Meryl Streep as a nun is Doubt.
Yeah.
And what's the violin teacher?
Does Meryl Streep leave the Abbey in Doubt?
Well, at some point she does. She goes out for some cigarettes.
Free spirited nun.
Sure. She's not free spirited, though, is she?
Oh.
What's that all about?
No, this one stumped us.
Ooh.
I he's got the answers here somewhere.
Has he?
I'll have a look.
Number eight.
Do you The Sound of Music of the Heart.
Sound of Music. Yes, that's Free Spirited Nun leaving the Abbey. is Sound of Music.
That's not Meryl Streep, though, is it?
No, but Meryl Streep teaching violin is probably...
Oh, is that the Music of the Heart?
I'm guessing, maybe. Which I've never heard of. Well done, Jared.
Okay.
Okay.
Well played.
Stumped us.
Oh, bit defeated.
Shall I do one of mine quickly?
Oh,
yeah,
go on.
A spoof of Star Wars, all set inside a human body's bloodstream.
Inner Spaceballs.
Yay! Well done. Well done.
Yeah, that was good.
Although, yeah, Inner Spaceballs does sound like some sort of medical
sounds
condition.
Wrong.
Exactly.
That sounds like the deleted scenes from Inner Space. Dennis Quaid, I'm not going there.
No, it's just the tagline. Again, referencing something that you'll hear in a few weeks. After the colon, Inner Space, colon, balls.
Do you know what? I was just...
Is that wrong?
No, I've just realised why... No.
I feel we've lost Jen.
No.
I feel this train of thought is unstoppable.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
And yet we're going to prove that it is stoppable by
smile.
Changing...
He's so happy.
Because I didn't realise there was a pun of train until I said it afterwards.
Oh, dear. Yes, Paul has called himself with a pun. This is unstoppable. Mm. The new Tony Scott and Denzel Washington and some other ugly, hideous man who none of us are interested in.
The lovely Chris Pine.
Is it Chris Pine?
Yeah.
I really
have you had the same thought I just had?
Possibly. Is it him and Gemma Arston?
Yeah, for God's sake.
That would make my week. I think we should try and set them up. Next time.
Go on then.
Yeah. To be honest, if I had any way of making contact with Gemma Arston, as if I'd waste it by then setting her up with Chris Pine instead of just watching the two of you fight to the death. Yeah. Yes, we saw a preview of this a few weeks ago, but unfortunately we're overviewing it now, by which time it's already out. So we've kind of blown that opportunity.
Well, but, you know, still better late than never.
Yes, but the trailer underwhelmed me. It looked a little bit silly, and I couldn't explain why it looked silly. It just did.
Because it's full-grown men running about on trains.
Well, yeah, it looked a little bit too much like Speed 3 trains. Yeah. And you're thinking, oh, really?
It just looked a bit like... It's a Tony Scott film, isn't it?
Yes.
If it's not, you know we're going to get the Tony Scott film. And it also looked like, oh no, it's a runaway train. Will they stop it? More than likely.
Yes.
Credits.
And I think also the problem is with the trailer, which is a slight mis-selling. Well, a little bit. Is that in the trailer they mention, say, oh no, we've got 150 kids and they're in a train, right in the path of the oncoming train. What are we going to do? And so it makes it sound a little bit like the whole film is just these two trains piling towards each other.
Yeah.
And what can you do? And that's not the film at all.
No.
I mean, one, there is the unstoppable train, but the train with the kids on, it's almost literally, we see all the kids piled on the train. So they've run away train, what are we going to do? We need to get them off the tracks. All right. And then the film carries on. Yeah. It's literally that. I mean, the kids on the train thing, which is a big part of the trailer, is nothing in the film at all.
No, it's just trying to go, there's suspense.
Yeah, it's 30 seconds of suspense. And you go, quick, get them off. And they just get off in time. But then the film carries on.
But the thing about this film is that it's based on true events.
Yes.
So we know, or at least you can find out, what really happens.
What happened. You assume people probably live, maybe.
I haven't seen the film. I don't want you to ruin the ending for me, but I'm guessing the film should be called Quite Stoppable.
Exactly, as it turns out, Stoppable.
Exactly. Otherwise, it's got a very dark ending.
Well, yes. And to be honest, the train would still be going.
Yeah, but it's not about... The thing about this film, it's about this old... The chap played by Denzel Washington, who's been working for this company for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And this new guy, played by Chris Pine, who comes along. And obviously there's a bit of cockiness of I'm the new guy and I know more than you do, little boy, etc. Mm-hmm. And it's this developing relationship that they have during this one day incident where they actually come together and may or may not manage to stop a train. So it's more about the relationship between the company, the bigger company getting, making... staff changes and how it affects people.
It ties into current economic concerns as well, in that Denzel Washington's about to get laid off, and yet they're still hiring new guys because they're cheaper to bring in new guys. And Chris Pine has family connections as well, which are sort of alluded to without ever really being explained.
Yeah.
But you don't need to be the details. You sort of need to know a bit of nepotism going on, possibly.
And so it's just
also him not being happy with that and saying, no, I'm here because I want to be here. And so... Yeah, there's...
So it's more of a social film than actually about a train. What makes it tense is the relationships... going on, and even between the staff and their employees. For example, at the beginning, the reason why this train becomes runaway is by the complete incompetence of a worker played by
Ethan Suplee.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
yeah,
he does
plays
just
it
play
very
the
well.
Bumbling train. Right. But again, it's nicely told, and you see how, essentially, he gets off the train he's on is moving very, very, very slowly. he needs to flip a switch. So he sets the limiter to say only go at this speed, but doesn't quite set it right, and then gets off to change a switch.
And it gradually builds up a momentum and him being slightly out of...
And then he thinks he just hasn't caught it in time, but that's because the train is speeding up slightly. And so it's just, it's a series of
And they don't think
errors.
It's a problem to begin with. Because
no.
Like, well,
and they
we'll
say, oh, we've got a runaway train. Yeah, it's going about 10 miles an hour. You get one of their friends on the line saying, right, could you, or not one of their friends, but someone who works at the rail company, saying, could you drive down the thing? And when it pootles along, just hop on board. And he goes along and it's not there. And it doesn't turn up because it's bombed past. Ooh. It's 70 miles an hour already. And so it's...
It's just this sequence of events that chain together builds quite nicely. Mm.
And there's a little bit of sort of setting up disaster movie-esque, you know, oh, don't do this, don't... But it's not too much. It's all quite understated.
No.
And then by the time the train actually gets going, due to, largely sound effects and very good camera angles and camera shots, they do a very good job of showing you it really is an unstoppable train. It's an enormous, it's a half mile long chunk of metal.
Because it should be so simple to stop it. You know, how hard? You just got to get on and do this. But
even this guy nearly gets back on it. Ethan Suplee just runs back and then trips up or something, or it doesn't just happens to slightly get away from him. And no one is panicking. No one's going, nah, this is terrible. Everyone's just going, oh, look at him, all right, we'll fix it later on. And then it just gets worse than everything.
And isn't it like carrying nuclear materials or something?
It's carrying chemicals.
It's carrying, sort of highly corrosive chemicals.
And passengers.
No, it's just a freight train.
Okay,
it's
just
freight. The risk, which isn't said, I don't think it's said in the trailer, but it's not a plot twist. The main problem is that, I mean, partly it's a runaway train, which causes problems, but they're in the middle of, is it Scranton or, not Scranton, but
well,
in the middle
it's
of...
Well, it's set different from where it actually was. So
oh, right.
I can't
but
remember.
In the middle of a small, not that small a town, sort of a medium-sized town, there's an elevated curve, so just 90-degree turn, which Chris Pine and Denzel Washington go through at one point. And then we realise this train is bombing towards that curve.
And it would definitely derail.
Yeah, and it's going to come off if it's going that fast. So they have to try and slow it down before that curve.
Right.
Otherwise it would explode and it's a highly populated
area.
Yeah,
because it'll fall off the edge of the track and hit storage tanks and it will just cause problems. And then we get Rosario Dawson, who is the train, not the fat controller, that's a Thomas the Tank Engine reference, but the train controller who's in the middle of the control centre, who is at odds with the vice president of the company, who is essentially trying to find the cheapest way of stopping it. And she's trying to get the best way of stopping it. So they're at odds. Mm. She's very good, actually.
Yeah,
she's very good at being competent but harried and trying to do the right thing.
Mm. So nothing's actually blown out of proportion. It's
it's all just, it all just much, much at the risk of a horrible metaphor, it's much like the train itself. It just sort of builds and builds and builds. Mm. And then you get to the point where various methods they try to stop the train just don't work. And the vice president saying, no, we'll do this and it'll definitely work and it'll be cheap and easy and it'll be fine. And Denzel Washington saying, no, that's not going to work. I've been doing this 25 years. I know it's not going to work. We're going to have to try something else. And what they try doesn't work. So Denzel Washington and Chris Pine have to come to the rescue.
Do like they did in Back to the Future 3 and have a big ravine and horses.
And a time machine. That would work. Yeah. Actually, there is a very good sequence where, which again, I think they did actually try, which is they get a train in front of it and sort of buffer up against it and then slam the brakes on the train in front and then try and drop by helicopter another driver into the train to stop it once it's slow enough. And that doesn't work.
And these obviously are real events.
Mm. Yeah,
this
I think
person
that is what
did
they
actually
tried.
Try and do it, and you see it not necessarily work out successfully, and it's quite horrific.
Mm. Yeah. And so what they end up having to do is we'll try and come up behind it and see if that works. And it all unfolds. But it's just a very good, solid action movie. Very well paced.
In real time.
Yeah.
Well, is it real time?
No,
it's within a few hours anyway, or at least a day.
It's a short period of time.
Well, hence inspiring our Desert Island Flicks of the
week.
Best film to only happen over the course of one day.
Yes.
Which we'll
come to you later.
But
ultimately, it's very... So don't be put off by the trailer, because the film itself is quite... It's
I was a bit put off by the trailer. Forget it.
Yeah, mm. I was slightly. And there were sort of a couple of titters in the audience when it gets going. You get the train full of kids and say, oh no, it's going to happen... And it's a little bit too disaster movie-y. Mm. But then it finds its feet and everyone seems to end up going with it.
I think it's only there to suggest how bad it could have gone. Really.
Yes, that's true.
So, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. And then eventually you realise that just this huge unstoppable train is a problem in and of itself. You don't need a train full of kids to cause trouble. It's just a nightmare.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very, very nicely done.
Hmm.
Well, I think I'm like that bloke who was sent down there to try and find the train. In that I'll go to the cinema, it's gone, it's already gone.
Well, yes,
I get there and go, well, I can't find it anywhere.
Quite possibly. I think, but I would say wait for the DVD. But I think the cinema is, given the sort of the imposing nature of a lot of the shot, it does work quite well in the cinema.
Yes, definitely.
Sound effects. So don't necessarily rush out, but you could do a lot worse.
Well, some thoughts from our listeners. Jed says Unstoppable succeeds mainly because it stays grounded, wheels to the tracks, and puts across an exciting yet credible adventure with a good sprinkling of emotion. That supplemented by the judicious use of explosions.
There are some explosions.
They're judiciously used.
Maybe.
No, my favourite sort of explosions.
The train does crash through a few things.
Yes.
Yeah, you get to, oh no, there's a horse box stuck on the tracks. What are we going to do?
Two men carrying a pane of glass.
People just stacking up crates of cabbages.
Yeah, nice.
Good for the train to blow through it.
Someone with a pram, but actually it's just containing cans. Yeah.
And Jez Gibson said, "Unstoppable, forgettable, but not a waste of time. 6.5 out of 10
Nice.
I think it's maybe slightly harsh, but I can see his point. And it's not. I wouldn't sort of rush out.
It's not going to change your life.
No, but it's a solid entertainment.
Yeah.
Unstoppable, forgettable. That's what you are. Anyway. Good. Shall we move on to email?
Yeah, some emails.
Generally from people who've just been watching films and thought they'd tell us what they were thought of them.
Cool. That's what this is
That's
all
what
about.
It's for. It's what the section's for. They've nailed the section. Well done.
It's taken two years. They finally worked out.
I get it now. So Andy Bastable says he's a bit behind the times in Bastable land. It's great. He lives in his own land. Recently saw The Book of Eli. Rather enjoyed it-ish.
Yeah. I enjoyed it-ish as well.
Yeah, I enjoyed it-ish. Yeah. Jess Gibson, meanwhile, had been watching Little Miss Sunshine.
Oh.
Little bit of sweet lol gem. Mm.
Does that mean
laugh out loud?
Laugh out loud.
Lots of love.
Gem.
Yeah, I wonder if he may have meant little gem.
Little gem.
We'll find out.
Also, Nowhere Boy. I haven't seen Nowhere Boy.
No, no,
good things. Also very watchable, although it does make you feel rather uncomfortable watching early scenes of Lennon with Mum. I think the word is Oedipal.
Ooh.
Mm.
That's an element I hadn't known about.
No, not
intriguing.
Really. Okay. Sarah Dean. Now, Sarah Dean's seen Tron Legacy. No,
ooh,
is that how
right.
it is?
It's out in America.
Maybe she's out this week.
She could be overseas.
Well, she's not. I know Sarah Dean. She's normally based in London, but she may be holidaying, or she may have had an advanced preview of Tron Legacy. It's really loud. The plot, the same as the first one, and Jeff Bridges speaks like a hippie, so we can never be in any doubt that he was the dude. It's okay.
I'm expecting it to be like.
Right.
Yeah, I think box office. I actually don't know what its results were. I think critics, people, I think it's got mediocre reviews or right reviews, but people seem to be wondering if it might give Disney pause in that they seem to have marketed it to death and promoted it hugely and spent a fortune on it, and it may not quite rise to those expectations. But I don't think anyone's saying it's terrible. It just may not be quite worth everything they've thrown at it.
Weird CGI face. Okay.
Well, yeah, that is true. Well, apparently sometimes that's very good, and other times it looks a little bit off.
Okay.
But given he's meant to be a computer program, that may fit.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Weird CGI young Jeff Bridges.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Odd.
Also had one from Mark Loveday, who I think referred to earlier. They have to say, Social Network is the best film I've seen since Inception. Can't think of a better writer than Aaron Sorkin at the moment. Like the fact it wasn't a Mark Zuckerberg love-in. I think the Winklevosses were lucky to get the mucky money. I can't even speak. It's Winklevoss. It throws you off.
The Winklevi.
I think the Winklevosses were lucky to get the money they did. Little bit less rowing and more reading of PHP and MySQL for beginners, and it would have been a different story. Very true. Yeah, if I can reverse engineer PHP and MySQL, anyone can. And they could have done that. Paul's looking so scared.
I'm sorry. I have no idea.
Speaking in tongues.
Website things.
Web things. I've heard of websites.
As if they knew how to do it themselves rather than hiring an engineer who'd then do it better.
I see.
They just could have done it themselves. And the world would be a very different place.
I understand now.
No, you don't.
Websites.
Websites.
It's where spiders go camping.
Oh.
It's Christmas!
It's time for puns.
Get your crackers out.
Whoa.
Go on, Jess.
Not like I'm a podcast. Oh dear.
Jen Rotterdam would.
She has. Anyway.
Sorry. Jed has emailed in. Now, he's sending in his reviews, and we should say his reviews are now up online. He has a blog. It's called themovieandme.blogspot.com, so you can see his reviews, which are full and mighty, and they are there. But a brief editor's highlight review of Tangled, which is the new Disney film, isn't it?
Yes, which is apparently quite good.
Rapunzel-y type thing.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Which is out where Jed is, but not where we are.
No.
Boom. So Jed says, far from the best the studio has produced, but I still laughed, I cried, and I cheered. The enchantment that leapt off the screen melted away some of the scepticism. It's hard to deny that even when tarnished by meddling executives, this film still has its fair share of magical moments.
Yeah, it does. So, everyone, your critics seem to generally be slightly qualified. I think they don't want to run away and say it's phenomenal, but I think it's extremely good. And they just want to sort of rein themselves in a bit. As in, it's not quite your Pixar Toy Story level. Because I think it's just Disney.
It's old school Disney, isn't it, really?
Yeah. But in CGI form. Yeah. And apparently it's very, very, very good. Just not quite having the Pixar magic, but still extremely good. Yeah. So yeah, I'm keen to see it.
Good. We've got two more films to race through very quickly. Not quickly. We'll see. We might take our time.
Quicklyish. Time's quickish.
We've waffled on long enough.
Well, so. That is true.
Due date.
Yeah. Yes, which is basically Planes, Trains and Automobiles, but different.
Yes.
That was easy.
Robert Downey Jr. and Zach Galifianakis as mismatched road crazy buddies. Yeah. Robert Downey Jr. Has a pregnant wife who's going in for a cesarean, and he has to get home in time. Zach Galifianakis is a lunatic, essentially.
He's a wannabe actor who's just...
Yeah, who's just a bit weird.
Yeah.
And then
in a nice way, in a kind of, you want to kill him.
Yeah, but it's not really his fault.
Yeah,
but he's just...
Kind of way. Yeah.
And he manages to get Robert Downey Jr. thrown off a flight by mistake, sort of, and himself as well. And so they end up teaming up because they need to rent a car together, and Robert Downey Jr. leaves when they get thrown off very quickly off the plane. So leaves his wallets with all his money and everything. Zach Galifianakis has some money, so they rent a car and drive cross-country. And hilarity ensues.
Yeah, then the caper begins.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Except the trouble is, I think the main trouble is that the caper doesn't really begin for about an hour.
Right.
Well, no, it begins, but it's not really they're going, you can laugh, guys. It's they're going, isn't this just incredibly irritating?
Jen found it ridiculous. I didn't find it. I wasn't tormented by it. It's light.
I call it the Lassie syndrome, when you're just like, just save the kids. Just do it. Just say the one thing that you need to rectify the whole situation now, please. But they didn't do that.
They didn't save the kids.
They didn't save the children.
All the kids died.
Oh, so it's only until
runaway train.
Yes.
It's only until about an hour way through when it gets silly enough to actually enjoy it.
Yeah, it's when they I think it's a point where Robert Downey Jr. His character finally relaxes a bit. And it's the point at which, without giving anything away, they end up in Mexico briefly. And then
when the monsters appear?
Yes.
Yeah.
how that all gets turned around, then the film sort of finds its feet a bit and sort of picks up in energy, and then it powers through to the end. But it's just, it's a little bit too stilted in terms of, we're stuck together, we don't like it. There's not quite enough laughs. It's all watchable, and Robert Downey Jr. is brilliant, but it just wasn't quite what I wanted.
No.
And after the Mexico escape, that and onwards, it all sort of picks up. And then if the whole film had been like that, I would have liked it more.
It sounds like a very easy pitch that someone said, got Robert Downey Jr. And Zach Galifianakis. And it's a bit like The Hangover, a bit like Planes, Trains and Automobiles.
Yeah.
Funny stuff happens.
Stick them together.
Promise.
It'll be fine. Yeah.
It's just incredibly frustrating, most of it.
Yeah, Jen was hiding behind her scarf most of it, just in agony. Whereas I didn't find it that, but it just wasn't funny enough.
I quite enjoyed it. I mean, it's not a bad film. The performances are great. I mean, they really get under your skin. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just is a bit of a I've just found it uncomfortable.
Yeah. No, it didn't quite sit right with me. Mm. But it was all right. But there are better films out there.
Okay,
I think.
Well, so agrees Mark Loveday, who says it's a 45-minute sketch show hiding in an hour and 40 minutes movie.
Yeah,
enjoyed the Harry Potter advert more than this.
That's a bit harsh. But yeah, I think it is. I think it needed more done to it to make it into this film. And I think in part, actually, there's a point. Robert Downey Jr.'s character neither of them are quite likable enough. I think that's the problem. Robert Downey Jr. isn't quite hard done by enough to make him to be sympathetic towards him, and he's a bit too unpleasant for no reason.
Mm.
And Zach Galifianakis is a bit
so
slightly
unaware.
Too stilted,
yeah.
And he's a bit, because I think in Planes, Trains and Automobiles, I haven't seen it for years, but I think John Candy is sort of an accidental idiot, but he's fundamentally quite normal. He just sort of, things happen to go wrong. Whereas Zach Galifianakis is more affected as a character.
Which is why I think that the Robert Downey Jr. character is, in effect, a bit of an arse, just to kind of make sure that you don't dislike anyone too much or like anyone over the other. I mean...
Yeah, and I think it's so Robert Downey Jr. can then mellow a bit and come to terms and cheer up a bit. And he does make reference to the fact that he you know, he sort of loses it sometimes, and you know, and his wife calls him on it as well. But it's slightly misused, and it doesn't quite sit right with me.
The more I think about this film, actually, the more I'm remembering liking a lot of it. But it's just the fact that it is a bit of a weird cocktail.
Yeah, doesn't hang together.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So yeah, but it's all right.
It's there.
Yeah.
It's there. It does what it does.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And one other film to mention.
Your Finnish film.
Is, yes, just to finish.
Get out.
It's a Finnish film called Rare Exports. And this is the first film from Finland I've seen. I've never seen a Finnish
Finland,
film.
Finland.
Yes. Aptly it's released this time of year because it's a Christmas film.
Hey.
But it's not very Christmassy. Oh. It's as Christmassy a film can get. Well, it's got reindeer in it.
Right.
But they're slaughtered.
Right.
It's got Santa in it, but he's evil and sort of dead.
Right.
It's got elves in it, but they're all naked old men who run after kids. And it's got lots of snow, but it's covered in blood.
Paedophiles?
Elves.
Right.
Well, weirdly, there is a scene in it, actually, where the elves are running after a child. And it doesn't... Because of the way... The film is actually... It's done very, very well.
Is it rated?
I don't actually know. I think I'm going to guess 12, maybe 15.
Oh, okay. Right.
And it doesn't seem paedophilic at all. The fact that it's just done very, very well, that these elves do just seem like they are basically henchmen of evil Santa. Running after this kid, not because of anything dodgy. They happen to be very, very naked, and with old men's willies flapping around everywhere.
Right.
But they are basically. It's based on this fairy tale myth that Santa Claus is not the Coca-Cola version of Santa. That Santa is this kind of dark, twisted figure,
right?
Who is there to punish the bad kids who've been naughty, not reward the kids who've been good. And according to this legend, the idea is that Santa, in this village in Finland, was running across a frozen lake, and he fell in the lake. And the villagers chased him across the lake, I think, because they're fed up of him. He fell in, froze, and then next spring, the villagers sort of chiselled him out and then dug out this big block of ice with Santa in it, buried him in the ground, and then just left him there. And then in this film, archaeologists come along and start digging. No. And what have they found? Oh, dear. And then kids start going missing, and that's not good.
Right. So is it basically a horror film, or is it sort of a...
It's got horror elements to it, but it's...
Yeah, it sounds
the,
like
the tension
it.
Isn't really ramped up that much, though. It's not really sort of like, scary thing, where's evil Santa going to be? It's just kind of... It's a drama. It's got comic moments as well. It's really just about a gang of about three or four guys who are trying to fight back against this sort of Santa and elf thing. And but it's really lightly done, some nice comic touches to it, good child actors who are in there as well, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really refreshing, different. You know, it's a subtitled film, so it's not going to attract everyone, but actually I went to see it in Cineworld Sheffield, and for a start, unusual to see a subtitled sort of art house foreign film in a big multiplex. But it was about half full screen, so it's not bad.
Good word of mouth.
Yeah, I think it's well worth a look. I really enjoyed it, and really not a family fun Christmas gather around the telly kind of Christmas film, but still a Christmas film nonetheless.
Yeah.
And just really, it amused me and in like and entertained me.
Cool. So, yeah, I think I'd like to go and see that.
Worth a look. Worth a look. Yes. Which brings us on to our Desert Island Flicks.
Yes,
Desert Island Flicks.
Last but not least.
Last but not least. And this is based on Unstoppable films based over the course of one day.
Yes. Which covers, it covers more films than I was expecting, but also there are certain films that you wouldn't think do. But
It's not real time as such. It's sort of, but near.
But it's sort of compact stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I didn't realise, of course, things like Die Hard fall in that category, of course. But that is not going to be my choice. Brilliant though it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, then, what is going to be your choice?
Mine is going to be Before Sunrise, and possibly Before Sunset, because they kind of come as a pair.
Yeah.
But then that's 2 days, but 10 years apart. So
yeah.
But yeah, Before Sunrise, I just love, and I did it not too long ago. I must have mentioned when I did my occasional viewing of just the two of them as a double bill, and was happy.
Yeah, good.
That passed.
Go on then, Paul.
I'm torn between two. Honourable mention to After Hours. Martin Scorsese's film, just about a guy who's living through a night, and just good because it makes use of the fact that it's all set over in one night, and does it. I suppose technically the fact it's past midnight, it's into the second day, but it's a 24-hour period, so it's fine.
Right.
So that's very good, very, very good. But I think I'm going to go for Doctor Strangelove.
Yes.
Because technically it's all in one day, and I think it's a marvellous film, and what a day it is.
Yes.
The last
real day of humanity. Yes. So, yeah, I'm going to have Dr. Strangelove.
Well, I was actually looking at the list again of potentials, going to pick Cloverfield, but then I realised that this is a technical error because the film is not set in one day. Part of the video footage is from a week ago and then even before then. So, So, as a result, I shall go for my original choice, which is Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
What a day!
Just a great film. Yeah.
Very good.
Enough said.
What a day this has been, etc. That's it.
That is.
We've waffled on long enough. We've waffled on plentifully.
We have taken up far too much of your time.
It's been an hour.
It's over an hour.
So now you'll never get back. Think of that.
Yeah. Sorry about that one.
Hope you did something useful at the same time. Yeah. Did the washing up, something like that. Maybe we should put that suggestion at the beginning, actually. Did the washing up.
But yes, but hope you enjoyed it. Yeah. Sorry, dragged on a bit. But
lots to get through.
It's been busy films.
Well, it's like the Christmas Radio Times is like double issue.
Well,
it's
a
double
episode.
It'll keep you going. So yes, thank you for joining us.
Next time we have a quiz.
Oh yes.
Hey!
Yay!
Christmas quiz.
Christmas quiz.
Yay!
Jen's getting so excited as if we haven't already done it.
I know.
We won't tell you who wins.
Hey!
Oh,
no.
Yeah! Bless you. But in the meantime, email us podcast@moviebanter.co.uk
and tweet us @moviebanter and look for Movie Banter on Facebook.
Indeed,
and say you like us.
Send us your film reviews, your mashups of movies and things, and anything else you'd like to. And we'll respond to it. We'll respond to it orally in the new year.
Yes.
Yes.
Or possibly, do we ever actually reply to emails? I feel slightly bad. I don't think we ever do. No. I'm very sorry if you do email. We really should do that, but we're all rubbish. We all tend to come in and they go, "Oh, brilliant! We'll could do that," and then forget about it.
But then we get
respond.
So many.
What is it? And then
we get like one a month. It's so many.
Get inundated with an email.
Exactly.
Yes, but no, so hopefully we reply to everyone on the air.
I think this is the best way.
Yes, they're all very much appreciated. Yes. If you don't reply, then that's just because we're bad people. Indeed. But yes, thank you very much.
Now go Christmas shopping and all that, and have a good December, and
we'll
see you next time.
All right.
Bye. Bye.